Hello and welcome to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog. It can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com. Hello everybody, this is Mwangi here. I hope you're having a fantastic day, night, evening, whatever it is that you're having. This interview is one that I conducted about 2 months ago, and it's with a woman who's called Susan. Now, the reason that I wanted to interview Susan is a good friend of my mother's, and the thing that really hooked me was the fact that she came here about 5 years ago. And pretty much started up a business from scratch and sold it for six figures recently. So I just thought, you know, that's really someone who materially has achieved quite a lot. And I really wanted to get into her mind, understand how she managed to achieve that. Today's interview is the first part of the interview. And today what she talks about is her impressions on Melbourne in terms of education, employment. She has a lot of fantastic tips, education, employment, raising children abroad. So this is, I think of all the interviews I've done where I've asked people to profile Melbourne, this is probably the most useful in terms of actual practical, applicable tips. So do enjoy. Have a fantastic day. This is Mwangi here. Be blessed. Bless others. This is Mwangi here, and I am here with Susan. How are you?
Oh, hi. I'm good. Yeah, how are you?
I am very well.
All right.
So, just so people get an impression of who you are, just talk about how you managed to come to Australia and what you've done since you've arrived.
Okay. Yeah, we migrated 5 years ago in 2003 with my family, my husband and my son, and we came as permanent residents. The reason we came was just to gain international experience and, just to take on whatever life was going to offer us here in Australia. And, for those 5 years, the first 2 years, you know, I spent them getting contract work here and there with government and with private organizations. And then the last 3 years, I spent them running a small private business. Yeah, and my husband's been working, and he also went to school. He did his master's. And my son came when he was going to grade one, so he's now in grade five. And in the meantime, we've been able to also get another child who is 3 years old. Yeah, she's going to kindergarten. Yeah, so I hope that in summary says who we are.
Yeah, it does. When you were coming in, did you always intend on going back?
Yeah, we did come with a plan to go back. We really loved home, and we had really good jobs. My husband had a very good, promising career in telecommunications. He was doing very well, and I was in community development back home. I was mostly working with the youth, and we were doing sort of community education just to help young people gain entrepreneur skills and leadership skills and those sorts of things. I come from a teaching background, so I was being able to use my teaching skills to create out-of-school-based programs for young people. It was very exciting, and, you know, I felt I wanted to be home to help my people. But then when we got this opportunity to come here, we felt really we needed to do it. It was really for the good of our country that we come and gain more skills and more exposure so we can go back home and be able to offer even more to the corporate sector and even the community. So we did have a plan of going back, and we came fully determined to learn as much as possible and to just gain as much exposure as possible for the benefit of our country and our community back home. Yeah.
Oh, and so you're going back soon, yes?
Yeah, we finished our 5 years. That's what we planned, and we didn't really see the need to change our plan. So we stuck to our five-year plan, and it's actually over. So it's time to go back home.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not like our visas, you know, like tell us to go. We can stay here for as long as we want, but it is a family decision that we go home.
Okay. So yeah. Now that you've been in Melbourne for 5 years, I'll just get your impressions on, you know, different elements of living in Melbourne. So, like, how have you seen Melbourne in terms of employment opportunities for, you know, Africans coming in of all age groups and varieties?
Employment opportunities for Africans coming in?
Yep.
I think there are various ways to look at it. I think also, first of all, it depends on the visa you're coming on. Some visas are very limiting. If you're coming on a visitor's visa, most visitors' visas will not allow you to gain any employment anyway. If you're coming as a student, I think you also have your limitations in terms of the number of hours you can work. So if you're coming on a permanent residency visa or a business visa, I think you do have much more openness in terms of what you can try out around here. In terms of how the labor market accepts us people from the African continent, in the beginning it's tough because most of our experiences back home are not really valued here. The Australian labor market is very specific on Australian working experience, and most employers don't want to be the first ones to try anyone who says their experience is overseas, and overseas is very general. It could be Africa, it could be Asia, it could be anywhere. I think there's just a general experience among all migrants that it's very, very hard to start off because employers are very, very, they're very skeptical about overseas experience for some reason. So, but once you're able to break that hurdle of overseas experience, once you're able to get that first employer that tries you out, then it becomes easier because your resume starts to get much more richer with local experience, and then employers, start to open up, and you realize that most migrants, after 2 years, most of them are able to change jobs and to actually start growing in their careers. In a period of 5 years, you find people who came in and had to start at entry-level jobs, and then in 5 years' time, because now they've been accepted in the labor market, they're able to have risen to management jobs. And it also depends on how determined you are. Some people lose hope too early. I realize that. Some people come into the country, and they actually don't understand that, the first 1 year, it's basically a migrant experience everywhere in the world, that you're really trying to prove yourself. And some people use that to bring themselves down, and so they're not able to rise up again. So some people stay on there for too long. That's how I feel. And it's mostly about their own perception of their own experiences. But if one is able to look beyond that and to actually strengthen yourself and tell yourself that, listen, I just really need to prove myself here, it works. And once you're accepted in the market, it's very good. And most employers here don't look at your color. They don't look at you as whether you're African or what. As long as you've got the skill, you can perform. Here, it's a very outcome. It's an outcome-based labor market. Employers are looking at outcome, period, It doesn't matter whether you're coming telling them you've got PhD, masters or whatever, but can you deliver what you're saying you can deliver? Most of the jobs here are very specific on KPIs, key performance indicators, and employers really, really stick to following up on KPIs as much as possible. So it's really about walking the talk. Whatever you're saying you are, you have to prove you are. And then there will be opportunities. The other positive thing about this place is that the unemployment level is less than 4%. So there is a chance for almost everybody to try out something if you're determined. Sometimes you may not be able to, excuse me. Sorry, let me regain my footing.
Okay.
I was saying the positive thing is that the unemployment rate is very low. Lots of jobs, there's lots of jobs being created. It's a very, very healthy labor market. It's a great economy. It's such a vibrant economy. I think it's one of the most vibrant economies at this specific time, in the global, in the way things are globally. Australia is doing really, really well. So there's a lot of opportunities. If people are not very choosy, people are willing to maybe try thinking outside of the box and try things that probably they were not doing at home to start with. Yeah, it's okay. Sometimes when we come in as migrants, we're too narrow-minded, and that doesn't really help us around here. You really have to think broadly. Think of other things you can do just to maybe enrich your experience and then eventually get back into your line or something like that. There is opportunity. There's lots of support from the government, which is so, so good. you know, if you come in and you go to the government offices, there's an office called the Centrelink office. They give you cards, you know, unemployment cards with some numbers that give you, make you eligible to actually access employment services free of charge. And you get support like in writing your resume. They even do what they call reverse marketing for you, where they actually get, they look out for employers for you. They send out your resume for you. It's all for free. They also have what they call job search training, where they take you through like a week or 2 weeks of training on the Australian job market, what are employers looking for, how to present yourself, some of the Australian, you know, the common Australian language, you know. They basically just orientate you on all that, and it's really all for free. So what I can say here is that the government is very, very helpful to new migrants. And, yeah, if people stay positive and really, really hang in there, the breakthrough does come through eventually. It does. For some people, it takes less time, and for some people, it takes more time.
And would you recommend that when people come in, they immediately go for that, the reverse marketing, so that they can get some experience, so that the employer is not very apprehensive about your overseas experience?
Yeah, I think it's very helpful, because I personally went through that program, and I actually also was a trainer in that program. I worked as an employment consultant. The materials that the government has produced, like they've produced lots of booklets to help new migrants, and once you go into those services, you're able to access all those booklets, you're able to access information about, you know, credible employment organizations. Some of them are specific to your profession, like accounting or sales or whatever. So much information which you wouldn't just get anywhere, you actually get them in those government offices. Then also you're able to get your own employment consultant who you're able to meet sometimes on a weekly basis, and they've got like an hour to actually just sit with you on a one-on-one and actually talk about your issues, your very specific issues, and they've got funding from the government to actually help you break through those issues. If it's, they even help you, like if you don't have money to go for interviews, they help you. If you don't have money to buy interviews, you wear because you've just come into the country, they actually do have budgets for those sorts of things. If you need a certain certificate to maybe understand the market, they pay for you to go to a college and get some certificates, you know, like MYOB or things like that. They actually do pay for you. But again, it depends on your visa. I need to be specific. Like, I don't think with student visas or, you know, or yes, some other visas, I don't think you can access those services. But if you've come on a permanent residence visa, then you are eligible for those services from the word go. You do get those services.
And of course, so students can.
I would encourage people to utilize all government support here, especially because we as a community, we're a very new community, like the Kenyan community. We're still very new. So if you're trying to rely on fellow Kenyans to help you, most of them don't actually know what to do, because most of them have probably been here not long enough also, and they've also just been struggling to settle down and to settle their families, and most of them don't actually know what to do. So sometimes here it's best to rely on the system, like the government system, the Centrelink system. It works really well.
Okay. Yeah. And what have you been your opinion, what you've observed in terms of race, racism, race relations, things like that?
What have been my observations? I actually have not experienced even one incident of racism for those 5 years, especially here in Melbourne. Melbournians are very, very accepting of people from multicultural backgrounds, because with so many of us here, and it's a very dynamic community. And the white people, the Asians, the Who, the Indians, everybody's very, very, very accepting. If there is racism, it must be very, very subtle. I personally have not experienced it. I haven't experienced it in the workplace. I've been in various workplaces, and I have felt accepted, you know, and I have felt respected and valued, and nobody looked at me like, you're black or you're African. I think people did look at me like, you know, whoa, you've got this to offer, you know, you're knowledgeable in this and that, and people do appreciate, you know, your skills and your talents a lot. And, yeah, if there's racism, it's very, very subtle. And if it's there, sometimes when you're a new migrant, it's best not to focus on it too much. Because what they say is that if you're looking out for something, you will get it. If you come in looking for racism, if you come into the country looking for racism, you will find racism. Because you will be looking for it. Whatever you're looking for, you'll get it. So I think my message to new migrants is just simply don't look out for it. Just come in, be positive, you know, join in the vibrancy of the communities here. Be involved. People here like people that are involved. If you just settle down in a suburb, be involved in the things that are happening in those suburbs. All councils, if you go to your council, they have a program of activities that are happening in your suburb. Be involved. Let your kids be involved. Like here, they have, like every end of the year, they've got end of year activities, festivities where people can demonstrate talent and everything. Just be involved in your community development, and people here do appreciate people that are making an effort to be involved in the community. But if you come and close yourself up, you're looking suspicious, you know, you're looking like you're already skeptical and suspicious of people, like you're frightened of them, then people also will look at you funny. They'll look at you like, what's wrong with you, you know? Yeah, but if you go out there, talk to people, let people know what you can offer. You know, volunteer in community activities. They've got so many community activities. Yeah, they do walkathons for cancer, you know, for kids with cancer, whatever. They're so community-oriented. And if you come in and get yourself involved in that, believe me, you will be so appreciated. Your color will be nothing. It will just be nothing because you will be part of that community. You will. And you will grow in that community.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my position. If there's racism, I don't know. I have personally not experienced it, and I was not out looking for it. So maybe that's why I didn't see it, because I wasn't looking for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about the culture of the place? I mean, I've already gotten your impressions on it, but just to be more specific on it, what do you think of the culture of Australia as compared to what you came from in Kenya?
The culture here, what can I say? The culture here is very, very dynamic because communities are very mixed up. In Kenya, it was more of a homogeneous culture, you know. You're all from one background or what have you, you know, so it's pretty much very homogeneous. And then you come here and people are so mixed up and everything. So you sort of have borrowed a little bit from everybody and from various cultures. So I find that, I don't know, I found living here being such an enriching experience. Because I've learned so much from a little bit of every culture, you know? If you go out into the restaurants, you find that there's a representation of every culture, the Italians, the Greeks, the Thai, the Vietnamese, the Chinese, the Japanese. Beautiful. Go out into the restaurants, it's all there. Everything is representative of the dynamic culture, especially here in Melbourne. And I just find it beautiful and colorful. And I find it like it's an opportunity for me to learn. I've really come to appreciate other people from other cultures. In Kenya, I wouldn't have had that opportunity because, after all, I was in a very homogeneous society, you know, apart from, you know, the different tribes, you know, and yet we've got so much in common already, you know. And then I came here and, you know, I lived in a community where, you know, everybody else was different. And all I can say is that there is a lot of opportunity to appreciate other cultures and to also teach people your own culture. People are very willing to learn different things. Like in the church we go to, they want us to teach them African songs, African cooking, you know, African way of expression. Some of them will tell us to, you know, like to write for them a piece of paper, like some simple words in African, like how to say hello in Africa, how to say, not in Africa, in Kenya, of course, you know, just simple words like those, because they want to learn. So, and we also want to learn. Like I've really picked quite a bit of Italian since I came here. You know, and so there's a greater sense of appreciation of a global culture when you're here, like more than when you would be home. In Kenya, you do appreciate just your own culture. So, I just have enjoyed here. Being here, it's been very, very enriching. And I think when I go home, I will be more appreciative of differences, even tribal differences. I think in Kenya, sometimes I feel because when you stay too much together, you know, you stereotype each other. You don't appreciate each other's differences and each other's cultures. And we use each other's cultures to hit at each other instead of using those cultures to actually appreciate other people and to actually see the beauty in that, which is so bad. And I think those are some of the things that are dragging back our community and the growth of our society. So what I really learned from being here is to just really appreciate other people and where they're coming from, and not to see my own culture as superior or inferior, because that's not what it's all about. It's not about superiority or inferiority. It's simply accepting that we are all different, but that in being different, we are all unique and we are all beautiful, and that's how we form the world.
Okay. And how easy is it to maintain a healthy lifestyle while living in a place like Melbourne?
Depends on when you say healthy. Health is very broad and very multifaceted. If you're talking of physical health,
let's break it down into physical health. As in, for you to maintain a state of, shall we say, constant positive body functioning. Let's leave it at that. I have to think about it now. It's basically how
you talk about physical health and how to maintain good physical health.
Yeah, how easy is it to maintain good physical health here?
Okay. Here I can say, I can look at it in two ways. In many ways, I've gained in many ways, and yet I feel like I've lost in some ways. In the way I've gained is that the Australians are very, very conscious of what they eat. Most Australians are. I don't know, I just found it here that people here were much more conscious of what they ate. I came to appreciate good diet. I came to learn a lot from friends from other backgrounds about just eating more fruits and vegetables and consuming more just fresh water, just things that, you know, I really had not taken seriously. When I came here, I actually started taking them seriously, because the community is such that there's just so much. People share information a lot in the churches, on the media. There's just a lot of emphasis on eating right, eating fruits. The other thing is that they're actually cheap, the veggies here, compared to other parts of the world. You can get really nice, fresh veggies in any market here. You know, beautiful veggies, very, very, very broad. You know, just a variety of veggies and fruits. So I found that in that way, in terms of my eating habits, I've actually improved and I'm actually better. I'm eating more fruits and veggies, consuming more fluid and taking more fresh juice, as opposed to, in Kenya, I used to consume a lot of soda, you know. And for some reason, I didn't actually think it was wrong. And then since I came here, I've actually realized it's not right, you know, even to keep giving my children a lot of soda, lots of Fanta, Sprite, juices like those. Here, you find that there's very small market for those sorts of juices, you know, what they call fizzy drinks. And Australians are very much conscious about what they eat. So in that way, I've learned a lot and I've gained a lot, and I've been able to transfer that knowledge to the way I cook and, you know, look after my family. But when it comes to the other element of being out there and exercising, I think in Kenya, there were more opportunities for that, because what I find about it is that life can be a little bit hectic when you've got the kids. So you're always running up and down. You're always in the cars driving the children around, because I've got little kids. You know, my son, you know, after school, he wants to go to tennis. He wants to go swimming. So I'm always chauffeuring him around. Or, you know, I'm with my little one, taking her to daycare, bringing her back. Then I get into the house. I'm busy cooking, what have you. So I actually don't actually find like I get enough time to actually do exercise, like walk or, you know, go to the gym. Or, you know, I found that it's really, really challenging for someone to get that time. My husband has been having to go to school, and he leaves home early, comes home very, very late. So he can't really help me look after the kids. So I found that I wasn't getting sufficient time to actually just withdraw from my family responsibilities and, you know, go to the gym. I missed that a lot. I used to do that a lot in Kenya. And also Kenya, there is a lot of walking culture. You know, in Kenya, even if you have a car, because of just the way the infrastructure is laid out, you find that even with a car, you're forced to park your car far. Say you're going into the city and you just have to walk. So there's a lot of walking, just day-to-day walking in Kenya. So I found that I missed that a lot, just walking, just normal walking. We don't do that a lot here, just because sometimes even the weather here just is not suitable. The winter is either too cold or the summer is too hot. So you just don't want to be out there also because of the weather. So in that way, I missed that physical element of exercising, but in another way, I gained in terms of knowledge about good eating habits and, you know, just, yeah. So there I gained and I lost in both ways, yeah.
Okay. And from the little exposure you had of the education and the education system here...
I can't hear you properly.
Oh, sorry. From some of the exposure you had to the education system here, you know, with your kids, your husband, what are your thoughts on the education system here in Australia?
The education system here in Australia, okay. Just from the experience I had with my son and with my husband, and also coming from a teaching background, because I am a teacher, so I was, I was very curious on what was happening. My view is that it's different from the system back home in many ways. It doesn't mean that it's a bad system. It's just a different system. What I found with my son is when he came and he was just about to go into grade one. And when he came in, he was actually the best in his class in terms of reading and writing. He came into a class where most of the kids at that stage could not still read a book. And that's because of the system here, which doesn't really emphasize a lot on what can I say. Like, the early stages of education doesn't really focus a lot on phonetics, and they focus a lot on association, and the kids learn through association system of learning, which is very different. I found it very weird. Kids take a lot to pick up on things like just reading and writing, but they do eventually pick up. So in that way, I felt that in terms of early childhood education, I found that I think the Kenyan system was better. Because, like, I found my son, you know, was able to really, you know, he was really better off than the kids in his class. And that gave him a very good momentum, which he has maintained. Now he's in grade five. He's still one of the top kids in his class because he was able to get the momentum. You still find kids here in grade five, grade six, who still cannot read, which is very sad. And you find kids also who, you know, that still don't have, like, just basic numeracy skills, you know, at that stage, you know. In Kenya, that would be very different. A grade five kid would be doing their times tables really, really well, would be really good in the drills, you know. Here, they don't really emphasize on the drills. And the early primary school education system is very relaxed on the children. It's like they don't want to put too much pressure on the children. And then what happens is that from upper primary school, it picks up, and then it picks up with so much momentum, and then lots of children are not able to cope. So you find that kids, because they've learned to be so relaxed, by the time they're going to, I think, grade eight, you know, there's so much pressure on them because all at once they're being told about the coming exam. There's a VCE exam in year 12, and now all at once it really frightens them. And I know a lot of parents are now forced to put their children into private tuition. I know lots of Kenyan parents that have had to do that from year 7, year 8. They've had to now go into private tuition because all at once they start seeing all the deficiencies in their children. Because the early primary education did not really put emphasis on helping this child start preparing early for that examination. So in that way, I just found that, you know, it's not a system I was very comfortable with in that way, in terms of that it was too relaxed in the early primary stages. But it's not a bad program in that what I found is that the benefits of it is that it really focuses a lot on creativity. Like with my son now, he's in grade 5. They're given very interesting projects to go into the internet, do research, you know, create projects, you know, very, very creative based, you know. And also it's a system that emphasizes a lot on self-expression, confidence building, life skills, behavior skills acquisition. So the system is very much geared on, yeah, those sorts of holistic skills. So in that way, I found that it's very, very helpful. Like, my child can do a lot of research on the internet, create projects. He can create a full PowerPoint project by himself. Beautiful, you know. So in that way, he's become much more expressed. He's a much more confident child. He can speak through his ideas with a lot of maturity. Now, I found that that was lacking a lot in our Kenyan system, because our Kenyan system, again, was too much based on drills almost all through, drills and rote memory and, you know, a lot of cramming and what have you. And the system in Kenya doesn't give a lot of room to self-expression and just that, what can you say, that creativity in the mind. It really doesn't give a lot of room for that. While the system here really, really, it's almost 80% of it is actually that. So the child will come out of school a much more confident child, much more creative, you know, can create projects. And, yeah, so in that way, it's a good program.
So would you recommend that perhaps the parents, they drill the children at home from very early on and they allow them to go and become creative while at school?
Yeah, I think here the parents have to play a role in their children's education. If a parent just expects that the school will do 100% of the job and you're not doing anything when your child comes home, believe me, by the time the child is in their upper primary studies, you will be having a lot of problems with your child, because the goals you had for your child, what you wanted them to achieve, you now realize they can't achieve it because they actually don't have the basic skills, the literacy and the numeracy skills that they need. So I think here, the system is such that as a parent, you have to put in a lot at home, help your child with reading, you know, help your child with times tables. You don't have to put them in a tuition program if you don't have the money. But there are a lot of books available for home-based learning. If you go into the post, they're called what, these post shops and these
news agency
shops, you can pick up a lot of books on, you know, just that can help you, you know, keep your child, you know, basically supplement for your child in terms of what they're not getting in school in terms of drilling. You find that kids here don't even have homework. I find my child, he's in grade 5. He doesn't have a single homework when he comes home, you know. So there's a lot of opportunity for parents to actually say, you know what, I know your school doesn't give you homework, but I'll still make sure that you have 1 hour or 2 hours of extra work when you come home. And I'll go into the shop, I'll buy the book, I will have to sit with my child and actually take them through the books. Otherwise, there's a lot of tuition, private tuition programs that are available, like Kumon. There's one called Kumon that's very, very good. There's another one called Keep McGrath, which is also very, very good. Or there are also all these other private tutors who mostly they advertise in the children's newspapers. If you go to the children's newspapers, which you get weekly from the schools, there's a lot of, you know, tutors that have advertised at the back of the paper. Or in some of these kids' magazines, there's a lot of advertisements for private tuition, which is more expensive, though. So sometimes it's better to go for group tutoring, like the Kumon type, because, you know, you spend less on that. Or you can organize a group of friends and, you know, be able to get a private tutor to teach your kids together, you know, like that. Yeah.
Okay. And continuing on from that, what is it like raising children here as compared to raising them back in Kenya? Hello?
Yeah, you were asking about raising children?
Yes.
The experience of raising children here. Yeah, what I found is that raising children here is much, much more challenging, especially when you're coming from our kind of societies. What we realized with our son, you know, because he was at home, he was in Kenya for 5 years and then we came here. And for those 5 years he was in Kenya, we really didn't do much directly for him, especially in terms of the direct care, because of having house helpers. We really didn't do much for him. But in the process, I think we lost a lot. I came here and it's when I realized that actually I didn't know my son. Actually didn't know much about him, because I had left him so much in the care of house girls. And, you know, I had been so concerned about my career, you know, and actually realized I hadn't played a big role in bringing up my son. And then I came here and then I had to take 100% responsibility for everything about him, the cleaning, the grooming, you know, what he puts in his school bag, you know, taking him to school, bringing him, checking his homework, everything, every little detail about him. And with time, even if it's physically tiring, it's emotionally tiring, I actually really started enjoying it, because my relationship with him and even with his father became much, much more stronger. He started talking to us more, you know, the bonding really, really became very tight because, you know, we just had to be there for him. After all, we could not delegate the responsibility to anyone else. Like, it's so easy to do that at home, you know. So in terms of raising children, it's much more challenging because you have to do 100% of the day-to-day caring for the children, cleaning them up, doing work. But at the same time, it is one of the most enriching experiences. I think we're going back home a stronger family. You know, we know our son. He knows us, you know. We've got deeper conversations with him. Yeah, we've got stronger bonding because we have to spend all the time with each other. Again, you're far away from the bigger community, so you're forced, like, every day you're together, like during weekends. You just have to spend them together, go for holidays, go to the park, you know, go and play a game of tennis together. So because you're spending so much time together, eventually you really, really bond. Emotionally, you bond a lot. Even spiritually, you bond a lot with your children when you're here. So the physical tiredness of having to clean them up and what have you is nothing compared to what you gain in terms of building a deep relationship with your children. That's been my experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is the end of part one.
Okay, great.
And that was the first part of the interview with Susan. Tomorrow I release the second part. And the second part is all about how she started up her business from scratch and sold it for six figures. She gives us some of her tips, some of the things she picked up along the way. So definitely make sure you listen up, listen to that interview. Let me just encourage you before I leave to subscribe to the podcast. You can do that by going to iTunes and looking for the Displaced African Podcast. If not, I have linked to, within the text version of this podcast, I have linked to a video where you can learn how to subscribe to this podcast. I update this podcast on a very regular basis, so definitely make sure you stay in the loop. And finally, if you have any suggestions about anything, anyone I should interview, any suggestions as to the direction of the blog, any ideas whatsoever, the email is masmilele, that's masmilele, @thedisplacedafrican.com. Send me an email, let me know what's on your mind. With that having been said, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a fantastic day. I'm out. This has been the Displaced African Podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog. You can find it at www.thedisplacedafrican.com.